Welcome to this week's segment of our Rock and Talk series, Roll On with Walter Crockett.
So I do want to tell this story from the Crockett days, where we played Martha's Vineyard a lot. And one time we played down there in this place where they put us in a trailer. It was a trailer it was slightly tilted, and the carpets were the club put us up there. The carpets were like moist.
Yeah. Yuck.
And outside were three bags of fish rotting in the sun.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I kid you not. So we decide we'll go to the nude beach. You know, we got nothing to do. And so we head over to Gay Head, and you have to park in this little restaurant maybe half a mile, quarter mile away from the beach, and walk there. So I drove down there in our bus. This was before we had drums, I think. No, we may have had drums. But I drove down on the bus, and I backed it up, the Volkswagen, and I hear a little crunching sound. And I get out, and I see that I've knocked over a Harley.
Oh, no.
And it wasn't just a Harley. It had a little plaque on it that said, Harley fucking Davidson. So I gingerly picked it back up.
Yeah.
And the guy wasn't anywhere around, so we went to the beach.
Yeah.
And we stayed there at the beach, in the nude beach, you know. I walked down toward the edge. I was a little nervous about taking my clothes. I walked down a little bit further down the beach, and then I took off my swimming suit, and I was walking around in the water, you know, feeling like carefree. And this like 16-year-old girl comes up to me and says, "Excuse me, sir, this is not the nude beach. This you,
oh
nude
my
beaches.
God!"
I said, "Oops," but we ended up staying there, and they had cliffs there with clay, and when the band got tired, they went back. For some reason, I decided to stay a little longer, and while they were back there, this huge guy in a motorcycle jacket was stomping around saying, who did this? I'm going to kill him. Kill him.
Oh, God.
Fortunately, when I got back, he wasn't there. He had left, so I escaped
death.
Death, yes. Oh, my.
Oh, God. I hope he's not listening right now.
And the lead lookers are looser, but they'll settle for a juicer. And down in D.C. girls are awesome, if you dig a cherry blossom. Where the kick out here's the peaches, if you like the sandy beaches. And the L.A. girls are fine, but you get to bring a line. Women from Jamaica Plain shake the building like a train. Middlebury girls are greater if you sport an alligator. UMass girls are acrobatic, but they're really too dogmatic. Smith girls are intellectual, but are they truly heterosexual? We like Worcester girls. Israeli girls say no, sir, if your sausage isn't kosher. And French girls are very moral, but their predilection's oral.
After Crockett broke up, you know, these guys, they kind of gave me grief after a while for playing too much country stuff and bluegrass stuff, right? Because we had started doing ska and everything, but I've always been into country and that stuff too. So what do? After the band breaks up, they start the band The Trailers, which is a straight country band.
So, yeah.
They called it the New Rex Trailers, which Rex Trailer was a guy who used to be a cowboy on TV in Boston. But then Rex Trailer's lawyer threatened to sue because they were playing at the New Rex Lounge.
Oh, so that made sense.
Yeah, but right. So they changed it to The Trailers, and they played for a good time. Billy was in that band, too, and Dave was in it, too, I think, before he moved to Nashville. And then later on, Duke was playing on the Fireman with Paul Vona after his uncle. Paul bought the Firehouse Cafe and ran that, and he had a band with Duke and Larry Preston playing, and it was really a great band. Billy was in that one, too. A really good band. Meanwhile, I was being a newspaper reporter. Oh, let me give you one. I know this is a lot of anecdotes, but...
That's okay. That's good. We like that.
One more time in Crockett. You know, sometimes you do get stiffed. We were using an agent in Boston, and we ended up getting screwed once in Martha's Vineyard, but another time on Cape Cod. I think we were playing in Falmouth. We go there, we play one night, and we get back we come back the next night, and they say, oh, no, we're not going to... They didn't pay us for the first night. And so we said, well, we're going to pack up and leave then, you know. Mm. And so we left. We climbed in the school bus and we, you know, got out of there at maybe 2 o'clock in the morning by the time we were packed and ready to go, and drove all the way to Amherst, where we had a gig the next early afternoon at a festival at UMass. And we come into town, and all these balloons in the sky at 6 a.m, and it was just,
wow.
It was, it was beautiful. It was also a balloon festival. We get out, and we park the bus more or less next to the outdoor air stage, so you can see it, and we played. We played a great set. And there were bands, there are some really good bands from Boston there, too, who were playing. And after we played, we took some mushrooms, or at least I did. And we went up and we climbed up on top of our bus and watched the show.
Wow.
And then I look over and there's some kid standing on top of the bus with us. And I said, hey, you're not in the band. And he said, I paid my dollar. There was a guy standing at the bottom charging people a dollar to
get up on your bus.
I
funny.
Think we kicked him off anyway, but we might have let him stay. In Crockett, we were playing to coffee house people a lot, you know, and some of them are church coffee houses. There's a really strong New England coffee house scene. You can play all over and you can make reasonable money. The problem we had was that we still couldn't play. We might have averaged once every 3 weeks. To stay good playing every 3 weeks, you really got to crank up your practice during the last week and get things right. You know, so it was work. You know, it's more work than the days we were playing 4, 5, 6 nights a week, and all of a sudden things come to you. Mm. You know, things you haven't done before. You'll play a lick or something, or make a mistake, but it works. And the song takes on a new growth to it.
Yeah.
And so some of your songs gradually become longer and longer because you learn pieces and you get up there and you're just in the groove, you know, when you're playing a real lot. When you do it less than that, it's not the same experience. So you got to try to make up for it in different ways. But it was work, but it was very rewarding because we could reach people, you know. They listened, they loved it, and we knew how to, by this time you knew how to get off stage. You don't get off stage, you don't do your last song and then start thanking everyone and saying, oh, we got records to sell, you know, and blah, blah, blah. While they're applauding, you pump your fist in the air and clap your hand and say, yeah, and walk off stage, and then they applaud louder, and then you come back and get your encore.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And little things like that, you know, all of the little... stagemanship stuff.
Mm.
How to even speak on a mic so that people can hear you rather than just hear somebody mumbling. that's fun. That's that's part of life. How to
connecting with the audience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I mentioned, you know, there would be times Valerie and I would be there and we'd swaying back, we're dancing together while we sing, but and I'd be gritting my teeth and I'd say, "Smile, smile." You know? Because I could tell she wasn't really in a good mood, but we're putting on a show, you know.
Oh, yeah.
But
oh yeah. Have you seen a ballerina sway on the green hill where the band is playing? A belonging in the way she wears our song. Wonder if your eyes are always smiling. Wonder will you ride with me a while and wander in another melody. I know. I mustn't try to press her like a flower, just a while away in April shower. Leave her room and let the flower bloom in May. And June and July, May and June and July.
I think it gets tougher too. It got tougher for her as the years go by, because you know you move into your 50s. It's a little, you know, it's different. You know, the hot chicks in American music are 20 or 25. Mm. You start thinking about that stuff. It might be easier these days, but it's a, you know, it's a challenge to female artists more than male. Not that it isn't a challenge to male, like. You know, it's very hard for me to go see somebody. Well, if it's a guy I love, I'd love to see it. But I don't really want to see a 78-year-old guy up there playing music. Mm. You know, I want to see somebody else, you know. And I can't sing songs about teenage love anymore. Mm. You know, it looks stupid. Mm. So it affects males and females in the same way, the aging. But at the same time, the things get deeper. You know, if you play the blues, just from playing the blues and without any particular extra effort, you know, just from listening and living it, they seep into you and you get better at it with years. And I've seen that with lots of musicians, you know, things just seep into you. So you can't give up on that. You've got to keep playing. It doesn't really matter. You know, you got to find people who can play with you or play with yourself. Pardon the expression. You know, at least sing songs, you know.
Yep.
Work on stuff. Find people who can still do it. And that's what I do right now. And I'm fortunate that I've had Chuck and Mudd for so long to play with. Even when we were playing in the Oxymorons, Chuck and Mudd were my friends, and I would play some gigs with them when I was available. We did our four albums. We went on, and then Valerie got sick and got cancer, and we stopped, and then she came in remission. We started again, then I got cancer, and then I recovered fully, so that was good, but she kept, you know, it was a three-year slide, and so we stopped playing, you know, sometime around 2007. That was, you know... It's tough. By this time, I was doing technical writing. I left Worcester Magazine and had to learn to become a technical writer, and that took a huge amount of work, too, and still keep playing in the band. We played in the Oxymorons throughout that, writing songs in while I was taking a walk at lunchtime, you know, and again calling myself up on the phone. But when Val, you know... The Val thing, it was just it was long and hard and heartbreaking, and I don't know what there is to learn from it. You learn stuff, but you know.
Did you ever write anything about that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I wrote, yeah. I started seeing Nancy shortly after Val died, because I was, you know, I'm a woman guy, you know.
Yeah.
I like to have a partner, and I'd had 3 years. It wasn't like I hadn't grieved, you know. Mm-hmm. It was 3 years of a very slow downhill, and she fought it every step of the way. Mm-hmm. Every step of the way. We got to the hospice finally in 2009, and we arrived there. She comes out of the hospital. She's just like, you know, when they're sitting up in bed, you look one way, but taking her out to the ambulance to go to the hospice, that she looked like a Holocaust survivor, you know. Yeah. You could see just how frail she was.
Mm-hmm.
And we drive off, and ambulance gets lost and goes the wrong way down the Southeast Expressway, and it comes out going toward Boston Airport.
Okay.
I mean, Logan Airport. Then finally they got there, and they're not ready for us, and they weren't at all prepared for someone of her level of needs. This was Rose Monahan, which did a good job, but at first it was a nightmare.
Mm.
And it was, but we get there and she says, well, I'm going to need some physical therapy so I can get walking again.
Wow. Because, yeah, she was a fighter.
She was, right. Jeez. To the end. And so that was very, and she was there for a day.
In the summer before she died, we'd walk out on the low tide toward the sunset spreading back across the sound. The ripples in the sand, holding dreams and holding hands, with hard times coming on. Back when young Black Lexi played with old Scouty night and day, tugging two dog sticks all over Lilac Hill. Then the laughter in her eyes swallowed up the bluest sky. Coming on. Hard times wrapped your wishes in a song. May the memory of those golden days remain when these hard times are gone. Well, we wrote those guitars down of this old town. None God put a rainbow in the clouds for me. Singing four-part harmony, sometimes ragged, but always free. The hard times coming on. And you should have seen her dance with her hands out in a trance. Should have felt her kisses on your brow. Then you would have been the king if she chose to wear your ring. Hard times coming on. Hard times wrapped your wishes in a song. May the memory of those golden days remain, but these hard times are gone.
That. So I married Nancy like 2 years later and didn't do much songwriting or anything. The band, there was no band to do, you know. I might have played with Chuck and Mudd a little bit. We went to Block Island one summer Emmy, my daughter Emmy, was still alive, and she had met Nancy, and you know, I had to tell Emmy, look, I have a woman that I'm in love with, you know, I know, you know, it's kind of soon and everything, but, you know, it's what, and she says, well, Mom said I had to let you.
Aww, wow.
Because Valerie knew, you know, what, that's what, while we were on Block Island, I wrote the first song about it, and cried all the way through it. But it got out, and I've played a lot. I didn't record it, because by the time I came to making the album, you know, there are just too many sad songs. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't want to be known as the man of sorrow. Mm-hmm. But it's a good song. Mm. You know, it's tough. And then Emmy passed away 2 years later, you know. And her brain tumor came back. She'd had a brain tumor, but it regrew a different kind, worse, more malignant type. So, yeah, I did write songs, and I wrote some songs I think are really good, and they're particularly sad. And but then Em died, and my daughter, you know, 2 years later, of a brain tumor recurrence. And I wrote songs about that, too, and they're very sad, too.
I wish I could have done something so she could be here today. Wish I could have done something. It's hard to see her slipping away. I wish I could have said something deeper than words can go. I wish I could have said something. All I could say was no. First beams of light till the glory of the morning blesses everything in sight. Did you ever see a young girl spread her little wings and fly when she had to leave you? Did you ever want to say goodbye? Thank you. better to have loved and lost than never to have loved at all. Just one ticket to see her smile. It's worth every single tear that I cried. Through the years as the memories fade, the morning sunlight turns to shade. Still, I wish I could have done something so she could be here today. I wish I could have done something. It's hard to see her slipping away. I wish I could have said something deeper than words can go. If I could say something now, I said I'm never gonna let her go.
Great songs. They're on my YouTube channel. You know, there are videos of them up there from, because a couple years into it, I decided I would try to play solo, you know, and I started going to open mics, and it didn't work out that well for me. I remember going to one open mic, and there was a guy there playing Latin disco and a tuxedo.
What?
Behind himself. I mean, he was on a recorded thing and doing the open mic. Then I get up with my songs and you know, solo is totally different. All of a sudden, it's not like there are five guys around you. It's not like you can take your fingers off the guitar at some point.
Being under and a microscope.
Gesture. And it's not like there's another singer who's better than you who can help you out, you know, or harmony. It's like you're right.
Naked up there
naked.
Under a microscope.
Very difficult. Very difficult. It's the same even today for open mics. I've tried recently going to open mics again, and I have to practice a song a million times to not screw it up in an open mic because my fingers just stop working under the pressure of people. You know, basically an audience of people who some they might be very friendly, but mostly they're waiting for you to get off stage so they can go on.
Yeah.
You know? And it's greatly character building. But so I tried that for a couple of years, and then I decided to try another band, and I started Walter Crockett and the Wannabe Wabbits. And I took everybody from the Oxymorons, which would be Fran McConville and Bob Dick and Mark Manuel, and added my son-in-law Matt on percussion, Matt Castle, and Dave Dick playing banjo and electric guitar. And then we got two fiddle players, Fran's daughter and Scott Heyman's daughter. So we got two young fiddle players, and female, and they were real good. And we were able to entertain the crowd. And our first performance, we got Duke to play electric guitar too, and we just packed John Henry's. We definitely broke records at John Henry's, and we played without Duke after that, and broke records out in this Lester Coffee House. We played a bunch of places, but by this time it's like 2014, you know, and we'd been away 2013-14. We'd been away from the coffee house scene for 5 years or more, six. And a lot of the people had moved on that used to book us. So all of a sudden, I got this big band of people to book into places with new people who hadn't heard us, and not necessarily a crowd to I couldn't guarantee them a draw.
Yeah.
Before, I knew we could draw people into places, you mm-hmm. know. And mature musicians who don't feel like going out to play for nothing just to see mm-hmm. if they can get a paying gig later on at the same place.
Yeah.
So it gets tougher as yep. you get older and people are more yeah. used to making money.
Yeah.
You know, when you're young and you live four guys in an apartment or something like that, and it's different. Mm-hmm. But it gets mm-hmm. tougher when you got to bring money in. And so we did that for about a year and a half, and I just decided it was just too much. The other thing about it was Valerie and I could shape things mm. by I'd write a song or she would write a song. We'd figure out the arrangement. We'd figure out the basic harmonies. Then Bob would step in and just make everything sound complete, and then we'd add the stuff. So it wasn't like we had all the cooks working on that, you know?
Yeah.
And suddenly you get five or six people trying to shape the arrangements. It's much trickier. It's hard yeah. being in bands,
yeah.
particularly if they're really democratic,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
So that was, and now it was just me, and I had to, you know, mm. it was tougher. So I stopped that, and then I went into playing with Dave West and Bill Fisher in the Stillwater String Band. Mm-hmm. And Dave had a great voice, so we, by this time, I'm playing all acoustic guitar ever since Crockett. I'm playing lead acoustic guitar. I played it with Chuck and Mudd mm-hmm. on one of their records. They have one of their records really great. Mm-hmm. It's About Time, it's called. And I did that with Dave. So that was a lot of fun because I would play all the solos and I learned to play fills in between. And he had a great voice. We could sing harmonies. And that went for about 4 years. And then I started thinking, gee, I had enough money to make my own album with Duke. And Duke said he would do it. And once I got into that, I wanted to do more of my own stuff. You know what I mean? Mm. Not just everybody else's stuff. And that changed things. So I made that album, and it was a wonderful experience. You know,
is that Children So Long?
Children So Long, yeah. That was like 3 years ago.
Thank you. sun was gonna rise up in the morning. Birds gonna sing around your bed. I feel your smiling eyes upon me. This time I can't stop crying. So hold on to me, darling. Hold on to me now. Hold on to me, darling. This time I can't stop crying. 'Cause in this time I can't stop crying. Well, this time I can't stop crying.
Got Kevin Berry, which I had known from, he was at Gil Raines a lot back in the day. Mm-hmm. Pretty sure he met Duke at Gil Raines, you know. Mm-hmm. And Tom West on keyboards, who played with Duke for many years, and Billy McGilvray I wanted to use, and Chuck and Mudd did the harmonies, and Chet Williamson came in and played harp on a couple songs, and Bob Dick sang harmony also. So it was great working with those guys, because it gave me validation, you know. I mean, I was paying for it, but at the same time, they liked the music, you know. I said, you know, because when you get down to the point where there's nobody, there is no crowd for you, you know, and you're not really playing the popular music of the day, It's very difficult to know, am I doing this right?
Yeah.
Is there something wrong here? You know, I think this stuff is pretty great, but I don't know. I might be an idiot. You know, as a matter of fact, I know I'm an idiot.
Well,
but I
love the album, and I try to separate the person, because I've known you for years and think you're awesome, and I try to listen to the album and not, you know, judge it. About you, and it's a great album. The musicianship and the songs and the words, and it's wonderful, and it's very emotionally, I don't know, raw, but oh, it's great. It's awesome. It
could have been rawer emotionally if I had put in some of those sad songs.
Oh, God.
But I just didn't want to go there that much, you know. But I really appreciate that. And I think, you know, Nancy, I don't know if you looked at the liner notes, but the liner notes and also the online version of them, which you can see full set. She did a wonderful job in designing that. She had designed albums for us in the Oxymorons too. She had done the covers of two albums.
That's cool.
So I was very pleased working with her, and I got to give her, you know, she has managed to be a fan of my stuff, you know. She likes the me that comes out when I'm on stage. You know, that wasn't the case in my first marriage. Obviously with Valerie it was, but she allows me to to grow musically and singing because she digs it. Mm. You know what I mean? Yeah. And it's very freeing to be able to, you know, you're one way in real life and you're another way when you're trying to inhabit a song. You know, you're trying to live a song. You got to be the character in a way, and it brings out parts of you that you might not know were there, or that didn't used to be there, particularly if you're a shy guy like me. And so she has been, she's really helped me keep on this, because as you get older, you know, and there are fewer people to play with, and all your friends are either busy or whatever, and there's much less of a scene than there was in the 70s when the entire baby boom generation was into the same kind of music. It gets tough to maintain. So I see that as my goal now, really, is to get through this part of my life in the same way I got through the parts of the life that were challenging early on when I had to, you know, write all the songs and play full time. I only played full time for, say, 12 years, you know. But
that's a long time.
That was a bunch of time. And then I played part time, you know, while working day gigs for years after that, only taking off the period after Crockett broke up. And that's hard work, too. Mm. You know, you got to be thinking all the time about that stuff and compartmentalizing and figuring out how, you know, singing while you drive and things like that, all this stuff. And at the same time, trying to be sane and not to try too hard.
Yeah.
Because if you want something too bad, then you'd end up distorting it.
Or disappointed.
Yeah. It's like So I see that as kind of the challenge right now. Mm. You know, you get old, you get all these incredible aches and pains. When I was 23, I was a social worker right out of college because I couldn't get any other job right before I joined the Prairie Oysters. And I would go to this house of this 90-year-old woman, back in the days when social workers actually went to people's houses, you know, when they had staff for that kind of thing. And I listened to her stories over and over. Mm. She'd tell me how she had to put a rubber finger on to shove her husband's...
suppository?
hemorrhoids. Tell me how she had to put a rubber finger on to push her hemorrhoids.
Back
say
in.
To me, "Oh, Mr. Crockett, you don't know what a woman has to do." And I said, "Well, I guess I don't, you know." And I'd sit there, you know, and sometimes I'd wander off, but I'd nod my head, and she'd say, "Oh, Mr. Crockett, you're so understanding." And, you know, she was balding on top, and she had a glass eye, and she had oxygen in a tube going into her nose and a mastectomy and diverticulosis, leg problems from head to toe.
Yeah.
And it was amazing to me. And now I'm her. You know, 12 years younger than she was at the time.
How are you, right?
I still haven't had to put that rubber finger on, though,
sir. Thank God.
But you know, so you get that, so, and you got to live with it, you know, and you got to, it's just like Trump, you know, and these times. People have survived tyranny. Most people have lived under tyranny for most of human civilization. And you have to just keep fighting, and you got to find the beauty where you can while you do that, you know? And that's my goal right now. Keep writing songs and keep playing, trying to get better, and not worry so much about, am I impressing people, you know? Not that I don't like to impress people.
I'm impressed.
Because that's my specialty, is trying to impress people. Not succeeding necessarily, but trying. Just trying to live life and remember to play music and remember to play with friends and enjoy things and stop worrying so damn much. I was talking about how Worcester is a real legacy of music, a real musical community, both the fans and the musicians of all kinds that really make it special. We need to cultivate it, you know. We need to pass it on as best we can. by being out there and playing and encouraging other people and going to see other musicians. I do want to say one thing, though, and it is you don't maintain a musical legacy by sucking. You maintain it by putting in the work and putting in the playing and singing time to get better. You got to practice. You got to work. You got to think. You don't maintain it by reading your lyrics off of an iPad or a music stand. You got to memorize a song in your spare time if you have to, in your car when you take a walk, by getting it into you so you can be the song. That's the thing. You got to be the song. You got to be the main character in the song. Mm-hmm. That is, if you're singing a song, if you're playing a song, you've got to play it with feeling, and you've got to look for not just how do I play this note the exact same way I played it before, but where can I go? What could I do what have I been doing for 5 years on this song that I could do differently? Mm-hmm. How can I let me take this apart and put it back together again? And then you grow that way. When you perform, you don't concentrate on just remembering the words and chords and arrangements. You got to get that into yourself first. You got to know your words. You got to know the chords. You got to know their arrangements. You got to have some idea that you're capable of hitting the licks that need to be hit. That's before you even start. And when you do that, that's when you can live it. That's what, you know, you can inhabit the song. You can take it to places it never went before. That's what you got to do. That's all what it's all about. That's what makes it real to yourself, and it frees you to become someone you didn't even know you were during that moment. And that gets other people to look up and say, hey, this is something special going on. This is something I want to come see again. I want to go on that trip again. So the point is, don't suck. You know?
Amen.
I did want to say something about Chuck and Mudd, because mm-hmm. I played with them for a long time, and I've learned a lot of stuff both about them and from them. They are like really special people, and they've written great songs, a lot of them on their album It's About Time, but many other besides that.
Well, sugar don't taste like sugar. Without you loving, and loving ain't half as nice.
but they got great taste too in music. You know, it tends to run to the Americana side of things, but they play stuff that I love to play on. And over the years, you know, they've gone, Chuck is a unique human being. I mean, he would rather play music than work on music. There's no question about that. Working on music, there are a lot of people that if you got to do the work, it kills you. And Chuck used to be like that. He's not like that anymore. He's willing to dig on it too, mm-hmm. but he wants to have fun. You know, it's like a kid. You know, he works with kids and he knows kids and he holds on to that childhood outlook, which is things are supposed to be fun. Yeah, I'm not supposed to be up here struggling and feeling like an idiot. I'm supposed to be enjoying myself. And that's a real lesson to me because I'm pretty type A when it comes to things like that. Mm. I worry about them. But Chuck is much less like that. But I've watched them grow over the years, and I love to play with them. And I played with them for quite a while, and it's still a great challenge. Partly from a musician's point of view, if you're Chuck tunes his guitar half a step flat, so most of the songs are in either E flat, A flat, or B flat.
Jeez, that's tough.
Yeah, that's even tough for bass players. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. Until you get used to it. So you got to spend time. Like before each gig, I try to set aside some time to just play in those keys because it's not where I normally go. And if I don't do that, I end up squawking. You know, I move my capo all around because I'm a guitar player. But I'll be thinking I'm playing the key of G because of the capo. I'm in G position. Once I go up in the neck, I'm really in A flat. So if I go to suddenly hit a note with some vigor, or perhaps two notes at the same time, and it's half a step flat, or much worse, if it's sharp, it's horribly embarrassing. So you got to stay on your toes with these guys.
Yeah.
But I love playing with them, and they've been very good for my whole life. I want to have a shout out to him because I think I've been playing with him for about 30 years off and on.
Wow.
And all the time for the past 15, you know. I mean, they play as a duo, sometimes as a trio with me, as a quartet with Peter Allard, and as a full band with all of us plus Sten Gustafson and Joey DeMarais.
I was at the last gig at John Henry's Hammer House, and it was incredible and so well-received. The crowd, you know, it was just a room full of love.
It's a real tribute to them. They've done some, you know, they did Hanover Theater. Yeah. They've done Mechanics Hall, you know, because they've been around so long and institutionally, you know, they've got, there are parents or probably even grandparents who went to their, maybe not grandparents, who went to Chuck's Chestnut Nursery School, where Mud also worked. My kids both went there.
Yeah.
But mostly it's good taste in music and having a beautiful spirit.
Yeah.
And so it's good. It's a healthy situation. I'm fortunate to be in it.
Mm. So I can't thank you enough for coming in and doing this rock and talk with me, Walter. It was absolutely wonderful. And I am sure that the community out there was thrilled to hear all these stories.
Well, Gail, it is always wonderful to see your smiling face and you're talking about a wonderful couple. You and Dan are just, it's like a big center of happiness in this town. You know, whenever I see you, I see your pictures on Facebook, and to have respect from good musicians like you is really nice too.
Oh, thanks. No, thank you for coming in. This was awesome. I knew it would be, and I couldn't wait to, you know, to hear it myself and to bring it to the masses.
Well, thank you.